Evening, everybody, and welcome to another session of Kayfabe Wrestling Radio on Gerwek.net. Also, our friends at ProWrestlingBetweenTheSheets.com have been posting our stuff, and thanks to Jim Barcelona of the Miami Herald for passing along our stuff as well. There'll be a news and notes version of this coming up in probably tomorrow, but we are gracious, we are blessed to have a person who's been, it's funny to look at his resume, and not every day you get somebody in this generation that came into the business like the late Terry Gordy, who was wrestling for the Fabulous Freebirds when he was 14, 15 years old. If you've been a fan of Ring of Honor, you've seen him there. Pro Wrestling Guerrilla, New Japan Pro Wrestling, which we'll dive into. Most recently, his last stint, I think, I lost count of how many times he was a part of TNA Wrestling. You saw him as the Suicide/Manic character, but we're going to get to talk with the one, the only, TJ Perkins, who is very gracious to join us. Monday night, of course, we saw the shock and news of Bryan Danielson having to leave the business due to concussional issues. You've shared locker rooms with him over your career a few times. Any thoughts or memories that you want to share with folks about Bryan?
Bryan is one of the, there's probably a couple guys that I've always kind of seen as like big brothers to me, because we come up around the same time. And we spent a lot of time together. Like, Samoa Joe's a guy. Like, we started around the same time. I think we started with, like, in the same year. And he, you know, he's older than I am. And Bryan, the same way. I think I started, like, a year before he did. And we came up, like, in the exact same generation. And he's a few years older. And I always looked at them like big brothers, just because, you know, we spent a lot of time, like, in the gym at practice and stuff like that together in different places. So yeah, I mean, a lot of the times that that's kind of how I would have described it is like Bryan was kind of like one of my older brothers.
When you look at someone like that who's been in the business around the same length as you or a little longer, and for fans that aren't aware of it, TJ's been wrestling, goodness, at least.
I'm a 1998 guy.
Yeah, when you sit there and you look at him. Do you or family members tapping you on the shoulder and going, okay, he's talking about having at least 10 concussions he can remember. How many have you had that you can remember, or have you never had anything happen to you that you ended up getting evaluated?
I've never been diagnosed with a concussion, I've had, you know, a lot of injury. I think if I were to map out my injuries, it would look like the back of that first Mick Foley book. Like,
oh God.
No, it's funny, but like I do remember actually, I think like diagramming like stick figure style, like just as like a catalog to myself to kind of remember. I've forgotten a lot of the injuries I've had because it's been so long. Like 17 years is a long time to keep track of when you get a lot of that stuff. And for me, I'm not the type of guy that like does a lot of things. Like, I don't do a lot of things by the book, like, as far as taking care of myself, as far as being meticulous. So a lot of stuff, even if it's serious, to me, it ends up being minor because I forget about it because I never really take breaks. But it looked a lot like that when I was trying to diagram it. But concussions, I'm sure that it's weird because the studies are so scary, right? You know?
We
find out every day that there's stuff that we didn't think was dangerous, and it is. And there's theories, like the guys that have done CTE for the NFL, like there's theories that even just the linemen coming off the line, and they're not even, you know, hitting very hard, and they're not, like, getting the bell rung, but even those are starting to be considered that those might be mini concussions already as well. So, I mean, I'm sure that there's times when I've, you know, been banged around quite a bit. And, you know, I did a lot of boxing, too, like, over my career and in training and stuff like that. So, you know, I've been hit pretty hard and, you know, I've been knocked down and stuff like that. But I mean, I've never been diagnosed with one, and I don't think that I've suffered any effects from anything like that as far as I can tell. I still play video games pretty good, so I think my reflexes and stuff are still okay, and my response time and all that. But it's scary, you know, and you do think about it. I tell my family all the time, it's part of the reason why I always pride myself on technical wrestling, because it's about longevity. And I mean, like 17 years is already a full career. I think a lot of guys would probably hang it up around this time if you were a pro athlete in any sport. So to think that I was kind of blessed with starting at such a young age that, like, if I could stay healthy, this might only be my halfway point just based on my age. Hmm. But thinking of if I want to have, like, that much road left ahead, then it's so much is about your health. And these days it's so much about, you know, taking care of your head because of all the studies and discoveries of how serious those injuries are.
For fans that may watch Lucha Underground right now, they may be sitting there like I did when I watched the first couple episodes and said, this looks really familiar. It kind of has that Wrestling Society X feel, and since you were briefly a part of that promotion, have you seen any of the Lucha Underground show? What do you think of it?
Oh, I think it's amazing. It might be my favorite show to watch, to be honest. I think it's really progressive in the style of production and the way that they present wrestling in a modern setting, and especially like translatable to like a television drama, you know. I think the format is probably more favorable in terms of what we were just talking about to guys' health, to be honest. Like shooting a season type of format and preparing, you know, to where there's some stops and goes, and it's not just this, like a steady marathon brand. But I think it's incredibly creative. I love the way it's presented, and maybe it's my bias, but like Lucha Libre is just, I mean, it's in my soul, man. It's just something I love so much.
Would you do the show? Have you ever been contacted to do Lucha Underground?
Yeah, actually, I believe that they probably would have had me before they shot the pilot, but I mean, I was obligated to TNA and stuff at the time. I've spoken with people with Lucha Underground and, you know, I'm sure that something like that could be a possibility. I'm missing out, like, you know, I'm sort of in a holding pattern. So, I mean, I don't really have any hurdles or anything stopping me. I'm kind of seeing how the field is laid out.
You, for the majority of your career, have been under a hood in one form or another. I've been blessed to see you compete both ways. For fans that watch Lucha Underground and then see a lot of the Japanese stuff, what's more comfortable for you? Do you sometimes go to the ring as TJ Perkins and you're sitting there going, oh crap, I want to be Puma right now. I want to be Suicide. I want to be Manic. Or does the reverse happen where you're so used to not being with the hood, and then all of a sudden you're like, oh crap, you want me to be Manic today?
I mean, I'm not a creature of habit. Like, I don't really believe in habits. I think that that's bad as a professional in anything you do if you operate based on habit, because, you know, good habits are created the same way bad habits are, and really what you're doing is operating on autopilot, which means that you're not concentrating at your fullest into your job. So given that most of the time situations are case by case and you can't every same, and again, that's the way you approach anything. It's the way doctors approach, you know, case files for their patients and things and everything. You just can't operate always on habit. You have to be able to look at everything individually, and that's how I approach my work, you know, just same as an actor would in all their different performances. Like, I've always liked playing different characters, so I mean, it's never really been about a comfort thing. It might be a genetic anomaly with me, but like, I don't feel pressure if that makes any sense. Like, I've never gotten nervous ever for wrestling. Not even
really?
When I was 13.
Wow.
Not even when I was 13. I've always had a steady hand with everything I do. I never get that. But on the flip side, I also don't really get adrenaline, so I don't really get excited that much either. So like, wow. A lot of times it helps me to operate on a more like rational level, like as far as my decision making, like in crunch time. And so I don't know, like, I've always looked at it that way. Every single day is totally different than the last one, and whatever I need to do in that moment, I just try not to get out of that moment. So if I'm me, then I'm me. If I'm something else, I'm something else. I think if I had to make a choice, I probably would just obviously prefer to be me, because I think that that's the most genuine, and that's what people, I think, are drawn to the most. I think when I play other characters, whether it's like El Bombero is a stripper fireman character that I play at Lucha Vavoom, you know, or Puma or Sadistico or, you know, Manic Suicide, whatever, you know, you want to refer to it. Like, they're all totally different characters. They're all over the map compared to each other. But I think the stuff that people were drawn to is when pieces of actual me would shine out through that. So I figure that probably would be best if they're getting all of me. They might, you know, buy into it a little bit more. They'd be more comfortable with it. And I think that's best for me as far as charisma goes and stuff like that. Because, you know, you're being genuine.
A lot of folks would dub you, I think Michael Cole and The Miz would dub you an indie darling. You, for several years on and off, have been a part of Pro Wrestling Guerrilla, which has had some of the most amazing show names, such as the Tango and Cash Invitational Tournament, Kurt WrestleMania. Are you adequately prepared to rock? What's been the thing that's kept that company going? Is it people like Joey Ryan, Super Dragon, Disco, all those guys? Is it the fans? Is it the talent? What makes that company survive to this day?
That's a good question. Well, first of all, Indie Darling is extremely generous. to be honest, I feel like the best stuff I've ever done has been in, like, major league type places. I feel like the indies is not where I've applied myself the best. I've kind of experimented on the indies more than anything. So a lot of times I feel like people look at my indie matches and they might be kind of underwhelmed a little bit. But within context, I kind of use it as practice. So there's times when I know that I'm not having the best performance, but I'm trying to see what's working, or not that I make mistakes on purpose, but sometimes I use that as experiment time, because, you know, I'm going to have a million of those, but every now and then you'll have a run somewhere and you want to make it count. Even if it's a small role, you want to, you know, have good efficiency. So you have to learn at some place, and that's where you learn. But as far as PWG, like, I think in the beginning years, actually for a long time, probably the first 7 years maybe, was really them just trying to make sure it stayed alive show by show, you know, trying to put out the most creative content possible and giving fans what they want as much as they can. But I feel like the last 6 years or so has really been that it carved out a life of its own as far as a niche and a place. It's like very, it has such a cult following, and it didn't have that before. I think in retro, like, revision history, people might say that it's always been that way, but really it's only been the last 6 years that it's like the fans have a life and soul of their own. It wasn't always like that. You know,
we have Sofia Vergara sitting in the audience at certain shows with Joe Manganiello. You're kind of like, whoa, okay, this got to be cool.
I just mean the pulse of the crowd is totally different. I mean, as a performer, you operate based on your audience. Like, one, there's no such thing as a bad audience. That's a real performer always thinks that way. And two, you know, we can't do our job without an audience. That is what creates all of our decisions that we make as a performer moment by moment. And I can tell very distinctly that it was totally different performing there, like, as mechanically speaking, as far as the decisions I have to make, totally different from, you know, 03 to like 2010, as it's been from 2010 till now. Like, the life of the crowd is a lot more malleable. It's a lot more predictable, but in a good way. And I feel like that it's become the lifeline of the company, I think, is the following that they've built. And it took them a while to do that.
You've had several stints in Ring of Honor over your career. Was there a particular time frame that piqued you as a performer that you look back on and going, that was my favorite block of time? Or does the Ring of Honor years just kind of blend together for you?
I mean, it blends together in the sense that they're all different, but like different in a very relative way. Like, it's like the sort of difference where you can't really place what was better or worse. Like, I couldn't rank it if I had to say. Like, when I first came in, it was 2003. It was like their like first year in business, and you know, I would come back in 04, and then, you know, 05 and 06 or whatever, and then just randomly. Same way as TNA. Like, I've probably seen every generation of both of those companies from inception till now.
Wow.
Just by virtue of coming in and out. Like, I'm like the R2-D2 of, like, those places. Because, like, I'm just a minor character that's recognizable in the background, and I just see it all come and go. I have a mental document of it, but...
You're a supporting player in your own autobiography.
Yeah, so like, exactly. So, but I personally, I think, felt like the last time I was there, the 2 or 3 years or whatever from like 2010 to like 2012 or 13 when I moved over to TNA, I feel like those were the best years as far as what I liked, because I felt like the company was really starting to grow and it was becoming more goal-oriented and more... it was coming together. Like the goals of the company was more like a team. Whereas before that, not that the company wasn't great, but there was a lot of individual things going on, and it wasn't a totally centralized idea. If that makes any sense. But I think part of that comes with the transition of becoming a more major league, mainstream style company. Like that type of transition, it's from top to bottom. It changes everything when production. To the roster goals, to the performances, to, you know, the ideas that are put on the table. Like, when that was all, like, overhauled and put into one, like, track working together, like, it changes so much. It changes everything. And that's really what makes the difference between, like, a fair weather regional company that doesn't operate to its fullest potential. That's the difference between that and, you know, major league companies that are really, you know, in a position to start making huge strides and make money.
Mm-hmm. Now comes the fun questions, because everybody's been probably sitting there going like, is he going to talk about TNA? No, we changed our mind. We're never going to talk about TNA at all. I lied to you all in the lead, and we're going to talk video games for the next 15 minutes. You've been under the Russo umbrella, the Bischoff and Hogan umbrella, the David Lagana umbrella. Heck, I think...
Do you have an umbrella?
I don't know. Who creatively in there do you feel you worked with the best from a creative office sense? Who did you the most due diligence? Was it as TJ Perkins, as Puma, or the most recent run when you were Suicide and Manic?
You mean like what do I? I guess the answer either way would be Suicide Manic. I mean obviously I had the most consistent run and most consistent time as that, because you know from like you know 13, 14, 15 all the way till now, like it was you know all the time for that. I'd probably say that you know the most recent time.
When they presented you that character, because I think at some point, I think my 13-year-old was Suicide. When they present this to you and you're like, okay, it's a character that was in the video game that sucked, that nobody played, and you want me to do what with it?
they didn't, actually. They didn't present it. Really? I presented it.
Oh, okay.
I came in and did some live events and I think a pay-per-view and they said great, but they originally had inquired about me when I was still under contract at Ring of Honor around Destination X time, which is when Kenny moved over, actually. I think if I remember correctly, Kenny was there for that.
Right.
I followed shortly after, but when I came in, it wasn't, I guess for lack of a better term, it wasn't X Division season, so. They were kind of like, okay, this is great, and we don't really know what to do with you right now. So, I was, like, talking to Al Snow, like, every day. and we were kind of putting ideas back and forth of what maybe I could do that we could present for the office and stuff like that. At one point, I actually was thinking that I wanted to be one of the gut check guys. So I kind of put together a story for that. They started airing the bumpers and stuff for Suicide coming back. And I think it was just going to be for like one match, just as a throwback type of thing. And so I was just sitting at home like any other fan watching Impact, and I saw the commercial, so I called and I said, I want to do that. Like, I don't know if you guys have anything planned, but I know that you guys always have like a rotating door of that, because it never really panned out. But I said, if you don't have any other plans for it and it's just going to be whoever, like, let me do it. And they said, great, that sounds like a good idea. And then just turned out that I guess it was like they saw it when I did it, they saw it as, this is how we always intended the character to be. Because I think they had great wrestlers playing the character. You know, Daniels is amazing, because Aaron is amazing. But it's like, they I don't think they fit the mold of what that character was supposed to be, and they're so much better as themselves, you know. And maybe I am better as myself too, I don't know. But like, I think the way that I was able to do it, they were like, this is what we wanted from the beginning. This is great. So one match turned into two turned into a pay-per-view. The pay-per-view turned into like the X Division title for the rest of the year. And I remember we were doing a TV taping in Las Vegas, not too long into it. And Dixie pulled me aside before we were going to go to the ring. And she was like, I think it was me, Sabin, and Aries were like the main event that night. And she pulled me aside and she said, you know, I don't remember you at all from before when you were coming in, and we had no plans for this character at all. We just thought it'd be a nice thing to do for the fans for one night. But it just turned out the way it did, and you're making it so that we can't stop using you as this. This can't stop being a thing. So she was like kind of blown away by what I was able to do with it. Just kind of taking the ball and running with it. Ironically, I think that's probably why I don't work there anymore, is from taking the ball and running with it, but for totally different reasons. So.
Oh, we'll get into those. Trust me. We're gonna do something quick, fans. We're going to stop tape and we're going to reload, because we're running out of time and we want to get a little more in-depth here with TJ Perkins. So sadly, yes, you're going to have to wait for session two of this to come along. If you want to follow TJ on Twitter, his handle is @MascaraManic. That's MANIK. The show is at My Name Is Wojcik. It's facebook.com/KayfabeWrestlingRadio. We'll be right back.